Hello, it's Katie and Melissa.
Neil Sean.
Hi, Neil. How you doing?
I'm fine. How are you guys?
We are good.
We're doing great, thank you. It's nice and hot in Hotlanta, so you know what to expect.
Hotlanta, it's always like that.
Pretty much, yeah. We have like 2 months of a respite every year. That's about it. But where are you calling us from today?
Well, we got a little break here, a couple weeks off. We just finished the first leg of the tour, and so we came. Everybody went home for a little bit. Def Leppard, they travel this way, which was something new for me, but I'm enjoying it. They like to take breaks in between, do a month on or a little over a month, and then take a couple weeks off, and then another month, and the same thing. And it's a very comfortable tour, and we're having a lot of fun out there.
So where are you now?
I'm in San Francisco.
Oh, okay. So you're taking that break at home.
Yeah, and it's beautiful. Actually, beautiful weather here right now, too.
That's what I hear all the time there.
I know. My niece just moved there, and I was like, oh, you're going to love it.
It's amazing. You know, I've been living here all my life and since a kid, and I find it like it would be hard for me to move somewhere else because the Bay Area is just so amazingly beautiful.
It really is. Are you a wine drinker?
No, I'm not. I just don't drink at all anymore.
Good for you.
I gave it up like a little over 10 years ago and did plenty of it in my career, you know.
Yeah.
And it was just time to get it together, you know, completely. And so it was a better move for me, and I'm feeling great.
Let's just stop and talk about that for 1 second, because it's been such a part of the rock and roll lifestyle. And I remember partying with you guys a million years ago, and you were so much fun, which I know you're still fun. But how has your life changed without any alcohol?
I don't hang out in bars and do that sort of thing any longer. I may go see some music from time to time if somebody I want to see. But my life is at home with my wife, and I enjoy it. Rock and roll lifestyle, a lot of people just don't last that long.
I know.
You know, I've been very fortunate to have had the career I've had since I was 15 and been touring pretty much ever since then. And so longevity, you know.
Yeah, but you're a workout guy, right? It seems like you've always taken good care of your body as far as that.
Yeah, I'm in shape. You know, I feel really good. That helps too, to feel better. But I think that just comes a time in your life where you start chopping things out that you don't really need to do, you
mm-hmm.
know? Certain other things take priority, and that's where it's at.
You're talking about working out. Have you and Phil Collins talked about anything on tour? Do you guys get to hang out and, you know, just discuss?
Well, he's a
crazy
maniac. The guy has always been, even back 12 years ago, mm-hmm. when we toured with him, he had a martial arts, like, instructor, a champion that was on tour with him. And so he's been into the arts for a long time. And, you know, I'm not that over the top into it. I just want to feel good and not look, you know, like frumpy. I mean, he is the epitome of, like, somebody, like, really taking it to the 10th degree and great guy.
Yeah, and I remember he had, like, videos and stuff that he was doing, you know, to teach it as well, like, online and you know, like, seriously serious about it.
Yeah, he's very serious about it, but it's obviously been good for him.
Mm-hmm.
With the tragedy that they went through many, many years ago, I think, you know, that was a sobering time for them.
Well, what is your relationship like with those guys? Like you say, you know, it's been a while since you toured together, and you've both managed to stay the course, keep touring pretty much every summer, and, you know, bringing in big crowds together and separately. And what is that background between you and Def Leppard?
We've always got along since we met. I mean, we met back, I think it was 82 or 83, and I believe it was Salt Lake City, and we were playing a show that night, and they were off. I believe they were playing the same place the night after us. So they came to the show, and we met backstage and just became friends. You know, I was a fan of their music. I know some of them were of ours. And so I hadn't really stayed in touch with anybody until management brought up this idea of touring together. And then it started, you know, actually coming together. And so, you know, I headed out to New York to do a lot of promo with Joe Elliott. And him and I had a blast. He's a really funny guy.
He is. He's a great guy.
Did a lot of promo for a week straight in New York. The rest of the guys are, like, really amazing, too. I knew Vivian way back in the days when he was playing with Dio.
Mm-hmm.
And respected him as a guitar player. We actually shared a cover of a magazine many years back. I think Guitar Works or Guitar Players, something mm-hmm. like that. They're all great guys. That's all I can tell you. It's a first class, top notch. They're all really, really cool.
The reviews I've read of the first leg of the tour have been really solid. I mean, and does that make you feel good to still read positive things about the band, or are you kind of over it?
Well, you know, some of the reviews I feel like have been sort of pushed out there and controlled a bit, you know. I've seen other reviews from fans that are amazing. So that's really what I care about. Mm-hmm. You know, I care about what our fans, what my fans think, and they have no problem telling me, like on my social media, you know. I stay in touch with my fans. I love it. They're the real eyeballs and the real ears out there.
That's right.
You know, beyond all the politics and everything else.
That's right. All that matters. Let me ask you about, because they're one of my favorite bands, aside from Journey, the Pretenders. What's it like being out on the road with the chick, Chrissy Hynde?
Well, you know what? We haven't gotten there yet, but I'm certain it's going to be really cool. I've always loved that band.
So they're not opening for you yet? I thought they were on the whole tour with you guys.
No, it's only for a few of the stadium dates. And
we are lucky enough to be one of them. I'm so excited.
Right. That's going to be very, very cool. And management is telling me that we're adding more stadium days. And so tickets are selling very, very well.
Well, I've got to say, the last time I saw them, they played with Stevie Nicks. And she has got like an incredible guitar player with her. I'm going to be curious to talk to you after you see the Pretenders with you guys, because, oh, my gosh.
It's Waddy who's with her, right? Isn't Waddy?
Well, there was another, the young guys who I'm thinking of, too.
She's always had very strong guitar players. You know, I've always listened to what they were doing, and they were always very, very strong. A lot of rockabilly influences on some of them, but in a modern way, you know?
Yes.
And very cool. So, you know, I'm open to it all. I hear so many great guitarists and have so many friends that are great guitarists. And so to me, you know, at this point in my career, there's nothing that's all that competitive. It's really not competitive to me any longer. You know, I can bring it as well as anybody else. And I do. And you go up and you express yourself and you have a good time. That's what the audience wants to see you do, mm-hmm. and the fans.
I just saw a picture of myself from years ago with one of our listeners. I'm talking years ago, and I was wearing one of my coveted T-shirts at the time, which was a Neil Sean guitar T-shirt. It had the headstock of your guitar across the front of the T-shirt.
Oh, yeah. That was like in, I don't know, 82, some 81, 82.
A little later than that, actually. Like that. But yeah. So do you still have your own guitars or what?
I don't at this point. I mean, I still have the design. I found out that being in the guitar business was, you know, I should have just been designing them and not trying to run my own business at the time while I was out on tour as well.
Right.
Any business that you run at this late day and age, you know, I'm figuring out that you need to have really together people running it for you if you're not checking on it every day. And I really feel like there's no way that you can do that. While I'm so busy with the band and solo projects and all that, I just don't have the time and really want to dedicate that much energy to that place. I mean, I could redo it, but I'd rather redo it with another company.
Interesting.
And which I'm sort of working on. I have like an open contract with PRS right now, and I have a lot of custom Fenders I've been working on throughout the years with them. And they now own Jackson, who made my guitar. And so there's discussions there. And Ernie Ball, there's all kinds of things are opening up. I just haven't been pushing on it. It's wild. Sometimes when you don't really seek and try to go after something, it just kind of falls in your hands.
That's when you know life is good, right?
That's it. And it's happening for a natural reason. That's the way I look at it. You know, if you have to chase anything or try so hard at something that you feel should happen like right now, it's not going to happen.
That's good advice for anybody listening right now.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Well, Neil, Katie mentioned, you know, you're playing our baseball stadium here in a week or so, and it's probably the biggest show you've done in Atlanta outside of Music Midtown, which you did just a few years ago. And has the Atlanta market been good to you guys over the years?
It's been amazing. Amazing, amazing market. I don't really recall ever having a show that was average there. It's always been like off the hook.
And one thing I remember at that Music Midtown show from a few years ago was it was probably one of the biggest sets I had seen, you know, just the number of people who were coming over to see you guys play, and they were all like in their 20s. And I thought that was just really amazing to see that you were still cultivating such a young audience.
Yeah, it's been like that. It's kind of mind-boggling to myself that after all these years, bottom line, I think that we got a lot of things right, you know, that are etched in stone at this point. We wrote a lot of great songs together. They've stood the test of time, and that's that.
Well, you know, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about Arnell, too. I mean, he's been with you guys now for more than a decade.
That's amazing to
me. It really is. I mean, it was 2007, right, that he joined?
Yes. This is going on his 11th year.
Yeah. And I mean, how have you seen him grow as a performer over the 11 years?
Well, you know what? Arnell was always like a tremendous performer from second one. And none of us were aware of how active he was when I found him on YouTube. Mm-hmm. When I found a clip of him singing a Survivor song and I heard his voice, I was like, wow, this guy is like really got a set of lungs and is singing his ass off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I went and checked out all the other clips that were under his name and a band he was playing with, and they were in this tiny little hard rock club, very, very small in Manila and in the Philippines, and he was just standing there singing. So I said, well, he sings great. I don't know what he's like on stage. And then we played our first show with him in Viña del Mar over a decade ago. And it was his very first show. It was in front of, you know, live on TV, 30 million people all over South America. And it was a do or die situation for all of us, but mainly him, you know.
Yeah.
But us as well. And it was this huge runways all around this building.
Mm-hmm.
It was like set up for the Stones or whomever, somebody that's very active, like Jagger.
Mm-hmm.
What I remember is we were playing great and going over great, and the audience was really, really receptive. So I had my eyes closed, and I'm looking up at the ceiling, you know, in the sky, and reaching for every note, as I do like most every night. And I opened my eyes, and I looked around, and I was like, where is Arnell? And he was like way, way out there, and he was just having a blast. And so from that second on, I go, oh, this is going to be a little different here. It's going to be good.
That's crazy, and it was meant to be, obviously.
Well, and what do you think getting to meet Steve Perry last year at the Rock Hall induction did for him and his confidence? Because wasn't that the first time they met?
I believe it was the first time they met. I wasn't there when they did meet. You know, all I can say is that I had a great time. While we were waiting backstage, I went in to see Steve, and I hadn't seen him since, you know, we did the Walk of Fame in Los Angeles
mm-hmm.
many, many years ago. And we had a great conversation and sort of just reconnected again. It made the whole evening really special.
Is there any chance of him ever doing anything with you guys again? I know he would never go on tour because of just the grueling aspect of it, but is that door sort of opened at all?
Well, you know what? I don't know. There's been no talk of it from us or him,
mm-hmm.
but I do feel by the connection that I had with him again, I felt like we connected immediately,
mm-hmm.
and it moved us both
mm-hmm.
because, you know, we've been through so many years. It brought me back to the very seed of the beginning when he first came in. With all the time that had passed, when I saw him and he reacted like he did and I reacted like I did, I could tell there was a lot of love there still
mm-hmm.
and respect for one another. And the things that he said at the induction were very moving to me. And so I wish nothing but the best for Steve. I hope he puts out soon. And I feel confident that someday him and I will get together and work on something, regardless what it is.
You deserve so much credit. I really like you. I met you many, many years ago. I've been doing Atlanta radio for 35 years. And when everything I read about Journey, it's always like, so will Steve Perry play at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? And Jonathan Cain's doing this now, blah, blah. And you're always in the middle of it. And you handle it so well, Neil. It's like, I feel like you just realized your fans, how much you mean to your fans.
I have no time for BS anymore or politics or inner struggles within bands or any of that. I am who I am, and I'm always going to call it real. I'm going to call it as it is, no BS, and that's who I am. I'm not going to put up with it either, you know?
Yep.
Everybody knows who I am, and we know each other pretty well by now. That's the way I want to live my life. I don't want to grease anybody or say something I don't mean or have somebody put words in my mouth. No, you know what? I'm going to call it like it is.
Good for you.
And I guess kind of on that same note, I mean, Jonathan had said that you guys sort of hit the reset button at the start of this year. And do you feel the same way about the status of your relationship after, you know, what happened toward the end of last year?
I think that John and I are making some strides and toward a better place in friendship and hopefully music as well.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of stuff to get through. There was a lot of stuff that happened that was really just not cool that I won't even go into.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually I can't go into at this point, but I do have a book coming out.
Oh, you do?
I've been working. Actually, I was working on a book, I think, before anybody started. It's been going on now. A friend of mine who's an attorney in Canada was gathering all the information from my family, from other musicians. It's not like a book where I'm talking about myself. It's a book where everybody's talking about me. You know, other musicians, great musicians I played with. I didn't really want to slap my lips about myself. And it's a reality book, and all the facts are facts. And it's been sitting there for 15 years and just keeps kind of getting more interesting. And so before I jump and do something too prematurely, and Jonathan just came with his book, I thought I'd wait it out a little bit longer. I'm not in any big hurry.
Good for you.
Do you think maybe by next year? Or, I mean, do you have any kind of timetable
for it?
Possibly,
yes. I'm seeing maybe next year. I have a new record also coming out, solo record that I completed a while ago with the amazing producer, drummer, writer, Narada Michael Walden.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
We did a record that I'm very, very proud of. And it's all instrumental, but it's orchestral. It's like classical orchestral blues. It's very different and moving. And we are definitely going to play some shows at the beginning of next year, probably nicer theaters. It hopefully involves some different string sections from those cities that we do play in.
Mm-hmm.
But it is rocking. It's not a sit down. Even though it would be a theater, you know, we have a vast variety of different types of music on this record. And I would say for myself, it's my blow by blow, like Jeff Beck had years ago. And I didn't write anything. You know, all I did was play. It was the first time I've done a record, a solo record like that, where I didn't have some say about songwriting. I just felt like Narda and I have known each other for many, many years. And I always thought he was such an amazing musician. But I didn't know how incredible he was until I went in the studio with him, how talented he is beyond just being a producer and a phenomenal drummer.
Mm-hmm.
But being able to put everything together. He plays keyboards, he writes the melodies, he does everything. And very quickly, I mean, I saw him maybe before it started. We met for about 2 weeks in beforehand, and I said, Narda, why don't you write me a couple songs? You know, I really want to do a record. I'd love to hear what you would come up with for me. And I don't want it to be like a Jeff Beck record. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody aspires to be Jeff Beck, but Jeff Beck is he's Jeff Beck.
Right.
And nobody's taking that away from him.
Right.
So I don't want to follow, you know, his leadership. I want to be my own man in my own situation and have somebody that I think understands where I'm coming from musically from a different place rather than from a pop rock place.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so he wrote for me for about a week, and he called me and he said, why don't you come down to the studio? I've got some stuff for you. And I'm thinking, oh, he's going to have a couple songs. This is really great. And so I walked in, and he played me, I think, 8 songs in a row that he had just written for me.
Wow.
And I wasn't buying it. I was like, come on, man. You've had this stuff shelved. You must have wrote this for Jeff or Raymond Gomez or somebody and just shelved it because they didn't want to do it. And he goes, no, honest to God, I did it just in the last week. We worked together, and he wrote a lot of the melodies that I'm playing on guitar. He produced the hell out of me like I was a singer, singing it. It was an interesting, very, very cool experience for me. just to sit down and be the student for a second.
Yeah. Like you say, that never happens. I also saw that you and Arnell and Steve Smith recorded that cover of Synchronicity 2 for Rock Against Trafficking. And with something like that, I mean, how do you decide who in the band is going to be involved in a side project, or like, you know, what you just went off and did yourself? Like, what's sort of the logistics
behind
that? Well,
you know what? It wasn't like I decided. I knew Arnell. I wanted to get him to sing it mm-hmm. and be a part of this whole Rock Against Trafficking, because I feel it's for a very good cause mm-hmm. and awareness, and it'll truly help and benefit some people that really need help. When I found Arnell, he did an amazing version of Roxanne from the Police, right? Mm-hmm. And I heard him do Sting, and I was like, oh, my God, this guy is insane. Mm-hmm. He's a chameleon. Mm-hmm. There almost wasn't anybody that he couldn't do. It was Nat King Cole, you name it, wow. and he would, like, just do it. It was Robert Plant, Steven Tyler, all of them. So I remembered how well he did the Sting vocals, and when the producer contacted me to get involved in a project, I said, yeah, I want to do it, because it was all Police songs mm-hmm. that all the other artists are doing. It's a compilation record. And so at that time, we were getting ready to rehearse to go on tour, and we were at Fantasy Studios in Oakland, Berkeley, rather, mm-hmm. where we had cut Escape and Frontiers. Two of our biggest records, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and we were rehearsing in a big room, and then I had a couple days off in between, and so I went in a smaller studio that I work in a lot over there. After I worked out what song was free, I picked Synchronicity 2, because I've always liked that song musically.
Yeah, it's a great
song.
And
I just basically worked it up by myself. I got some drum samples. We did some very simple drum samples, picked a tempo that was close to the record. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I learned Andy Summers' guitar parts
right.
and accordion, so they were very accurate. And then I added some of my own stuff. At that point, I had just added a solo section in the middle, so it would go on a little bit of a different excursion than the actual Police record. Mm-hmm. I just cut to a drum machine, I played bass, and I played guitar, and that was it. And then Arnell came in before rehearsal, and no kidding, he did it in one take.
No way.
He laid down that vocal. There was no fixes.
Wow.
And there was no tuning. It was like, wow. He was like, that's spot on. I was like, that's insane.
That is insane.
And so after we finished rehearsing, I had like another couple of weeks before we left on tour. And I went back in the studio for about 3 days. And I said, I want to do something different with this. I started thinking like, okay, so what if there's a concert for this benefit? Mm-hmm. Which there most likely will be down the road mm-hmm. when this record finally is released as a record, mm-hmm. an album. What would I want to walk on stage and play to beyond the song itself? And so I started just imagining, orchestrating the end of the song and lengthening the song. So it was a bit different from the Police version. Mm-hmm. And so I added all the extra chord segments and worked with the producer on the orchestration. I said, think like Paul McCartney and Live and Let Die. I said, that's what I'm hearing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Gary Miller is a producer and keyboardist on it, and he just sent that back to me a bit before we started this tour, and I went, wow, this is really cool. And so now we use it as an opening for our show with a video that I kind of put together so people know that it's Arnell, myself, and then after I did all the guitars with the bass and Arnell, then I went to New York and I had Steve Smith replace the rhythm machine. And he did an amazing job on drums. And keys were already there and the bass was already there. Otherwise, I would ask Ross and John to do it. So it's what we walk on to now.
Oh, that's cool. So we'll see it. That's great.
That is so cool.
And people become more aware of what it's really about.
Yeah.
Because when I first put it up, people are going, some people are going, I love it. Some people were going, what are you doing a cover for? We ran out of ideas.
Right.
I mean, you know, it's so funny, man. Everybody's got an opinion.
And the video is very cool, too. I love the video for it, too. It's so artsy and just looks great.
Yeah, it's just to get, I didn't want to spend, you know, $100,000
right.
on a video.
Right.
But just to get the message across what the benefit is about. And who's in it? I think it conveys that. So I think it was well done.
Going from new to old, I just have to have your take on this. Escape is one of my favorite albums ever. It's the first year. You're graduated from college, started in radio. The song Escape is one of the greatest songs ever because of your guitar on it. And Don't Stop Believin' wasn't a top 40 hit when it first came out. I played it on the radio. Wasn't a top 40 hit. There were song after song that was a huge hit off that album. And then it must have been The Sopranos that made Don't Stop Believin' become a huge hit, correct?
You know, it's wild. I think it's really crazy. I put up some clips, not only Don't Stop Believin', but Light. One of the first, second song I ever wrote was Steve Perry. That song has become a total anthem. I mean, every night, every venue, I said, get out your lighters and light this place up, you know. People don't have to, but they do, and it looks insane, and they sing louder than I know. Every word. A lot of our songs are like that, and Lights was not a bona fide hit either.
I know
but
it.
I think it is now. I told Irving Azoff, I wrote him the other day, and I sent him the video of everybody singing it that I stuck up, you know, on my social media, and I said, this is insane. I go, this is an anthem. He goes, I agree. I said, we should re-release it. He goes, well, we can do that. I go, just like we did with Don't Stop Believing. I mean, I think it's a bona fide, a smash hit, an anthem that everybody knows. Can you really explain that? Radio is radio. And, you know, you being in it for so long, you know how many transformations there's been.
Yes.
On how it's run and how it's completely changing from day to day. Formatted. And so in the days when Infinity came out, it was like your local guy that's in management drops it by the radio station where the president died. And will you please play this for us, you know? And so it's completely different now. But yeah, Don't Stop Believing, I believed when we wrote it and we finished recording it, I remember looking at Steve and John and everybody else in a band and going, I think that's going to be a huge hit.
Uh-huh.
And it wasn't immediately, but it was in concert. That's the thing. Is
yes.
Even if it wasn't a huge hit, according to radio and demographics on, if you're going to put a number on it, like how high did it go? There's so many politics, as you know,
yep.
About a number one record. Okay.
Yeah.
There's a lot of, you know, everything that goes into that. Just because it doesn't have a number on it doesn't mean that it's not a bona fide smash in my mind.
It goes back to the fans again. If you didn't have a fan that was producing or directing the Sopranos, and then Glee, I remember watching that first year of Glee, and that was like brilliant. That's what put them on the map, was that song. And if you didn't have people that were writing these TV shows or movies or whatever they are that weren't fans, who knows, right? But you have such great fans, and we all love your music so much. It's kind of part of our lives.
I think the best thing that has come out of Glee for us and people finding about the younger audience finding out about Journey.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That never knew we existed before. And that's a lot, I think, of what you're seeing in the audience is the aftermath after having a lot of success with their own version of it that they did. That audience getting curious and going back and listening to our record.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're coming to the show and they're going, wow. This is so different. These guys actually play. They actually
right.
play and they sing, you know?
Yes.
Much different than what they're used to seeing now, you know?
Yeah. I am curious, though, with Don't Stop Believin', you end the set with it, but not the show with it. And I know you were doing Any Way You Want It and Love and Touch and Squeezin' as the final song for some of these recent shows. How come? How come not just end it with Don't Stop Believin', since that is sort of the song now?
You know what? I don't know. We keep on... We haven't stopped shuffling things around. We're still moving things around. It's like a tuning process, and you kind of tune according to what market you're playing, what the whole feeling of the energy is, you know, mm-hmm. and the vibe of who you're playing with, where you're playing, if we're closing, if we're opening, or playing in front of Def Leppard. You know, we keep flip-flopping.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's been working out really great. I think we just don't happen to play as loud as they do. And wow, they are really like
yeah.
to listen. There was a friend of Steve Smith that was out there the other night that had a dB meter, right, in his telephone, in an iPhone, which I've never seen that app, but I'm going to get one now. And Steve showed me it went from, I believe, 118 dB to 122 dB. That is like, wow.
Yeah.
Insane. insanely loud. Yeah. And their music, I think it sounds good like that. I think our music doesn't sound as good that loud. I think, you know, our music sounds good when it's big and fat and powerful, mm-hmm. but, you know, sort of warmer, like a jukebox.
Yeah.
They have, like, the PA is a bit different. It's taken me some time to get used to it because they have so many subs. Mm-hmm. And this is their PA, and they didn't want to use the PA we were using, which was a Myers system. And so I'm hearing clips, though, from the back of the auditorium, which I think that's the best place for this sound system for us right mm-hmm. now.
Well, I'm sure everybody I've talked to, artists who have played this baseball stadium in Atlanta, really like the sound of it. So hopefully it'll work out great for you guys as well.
Well, outside it's really great. I think that it sounds really good outside. It really doesn't matter if it's really loud outside because the sound only travels so far. Mm-hmm. When it's outside, it goes up in the air.
Yes.
And so if you don't have a lot of system outside, usually it does not sound good.
Right.
So I'm looking forward to the stadium days because I think that's really what the system is built for. And also both bands. And whether it's the Pretenders, which we're playing in Atlanta with, and I'm excited about. But we also have some dates with that Cheap Trick are on, mm-hmm. some of the stadium dates, one Peter Frampton.
And
what a fun summer for you.
Yeah, fun and not as busy as it usually is. I'm enjoying it.
That kind of came full circle because when we started talking to you this afternoon, you're like, well, I'm actually taking a day off. I mean, that's you deserve it.
Yeah, I'm not used to it. I'm used to like working it, man, like every day, you know?
Aww.
So if something isn't happening, I'm going, what's up?
Right.
Well, we were just talking about you're the next big concert coming to town. So we can't wait till July 1st. I'm so excited about seeing you back in Atlanta.
Well, we're excited about coming. I think it's going to be an amazing show. And I'm looking forward to it. Definitely playing in Atlanta again. Hot Atlanta.
Yeah.
You know, it's always hot there. It's always great. The fans are amazing. And so we're all looking forward to getting back there.